The self-proclaimed Zodiac Killer claimed to have killed 37 people during his 5 years of terrorizing the San Francisco Bay Area beginning in December 1968. However, he was only linked conclusively to 8 victims. He taunted police and made threats through letters sent to area newspapers and mocked the police for their inability to catch him. And they never did. Tom Voigt from ZodiacKiller.com is next with the latest right here on Coast to Coast AM. Tom Voigt is an expert on the Zodiac Killer's case and webmaster of ZodiacKiller.com, which has been online since 1998. ZodiacKiller.com is dedicated to identifying California's still at large Zodiac Killer from the late 1960s, early 1970s. As a result of the site's popularity with amateur detectives, mystery buffs, and puzzle solvers, Tom has been featured on the Howard Stern Show and appeared in more than 10 television features about the case. In late 2004, Newsweek magazine published an article about his work. Most recently, he appeared in an episode of Hidden City on the Travel Channel. While he lives in Portland, Oregon, he spends as much time as possible in the San Francisco area where the Zodiac's crimes took place. Tom Voigt, welcome back to Coast AM. How are you?
Hey, great. Thanks for having me back on. It's like my home away from home is Coast to Coast. And this is, I think, my fourth or fifth time. So, yeah, it's great. Thanks.
Well, you and I spoke back in 2014, so it's been a little while, 6 years, hard to believe.
Time's flying. In fact, the Zodiac case itself is just turned, I think, 51 years old. So it's past whatever anniversary that is, golden or silver or something. So
right, heading into the sixth decade, that's quite a length of time for a cold case. But let me ask you, because I've read where you say that you're in this, meaning investigating the Zodiac case, until Zodiac is identified or you pass away.
Yeah.
What is it? Is it personal? Did you know one of the victims, or why are you so fascinated with this case?
My mom asked me that at least two or three times a year. She's very concerned. But I'll tell you what I tell my mom. I have no idea. I don't know why, but I think it's I think it's hereditary. My father was an investigative reporter back in the late 1960s in California. He worked for several Southern California newspapers and was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. And he was an investigative journalist, and I think that I just kind of grew up in that bizarre atmosphere of the late 60s, 1969 California, all the crazy stuff that was going on down there. And I think it influenced me maybe subconsciously. And then I just kind of, after our family relocated to Portland, I think I just kind of naturally took over for where my dad left off. But, yeah, I don't know why. It was like some kind of a virus, you know. You wake up and all of a sudden you have a sore throat. I woke up and I just had to catch the Zodiac Killer.
And do you feel a personal connection to the 8 victims? I mean, is this a way of maybe ensuring that they're not forgotten?
Absolutely. In fact, what I've done since actually a couple of years before I launched ZodiacKiller.com, probably 1996, I started collecting information about the case, making connections with the actual original players. And I've always tried to focus on the victims. And I get as much enjoyment out of sharing with the world maybe a never-seen picture of one of the victims. I get as much enjoyment out of that as I do uncovering a never-seen, you know, crime scene photo, police report, official document. It's just important to keep the victims in mind. And I've always tried to tell the story of the Zodiac Killer using the victims as the foundation, because you know, we know who they are, and it's a tragic story, and I like to keep them alive. I don't like to show the same old black and white yearbook photos that you see on a lot of TV shows or whatever. I like to reach out to the families and get you know, candid shots of who they really were, pictures and so forth. And even I have letters that victims had written, personal letters and so forth, that family members wanted me to share. And I'm happy to do that. I've been doing that for 20 plus years now.
Because it's 51 years ago,
yeah,
since the first victims in December of 1968, there are many people listening who may only be familiar with the Zodiac Killer because of the 2007 movie Zodiac. So if we could spend just a few minutes, just give us kind of the Reader's Digest version. And I mean, I don't like to give it short shrift because, you know, we're talking about human lives that were snuffed out here. But just kind of give us the timeline, if you could, of the killing spree.
Well, I kind of it's kind of hard to tell in chronological order because he didn't call himself the Zodiac until August of 1969, and by then he already had several victims. So you kind of have to start in 1968, and then you go to 1969, and then you have to jump back to 1966. So he was making it confusing long before anyone knew who he even was. But the Zodiac was probably the most famous of all the infamous serial killers, the Ted Bundys, and everybody's into serial killers now. It's like a fad, which is really strange, by the way. That's a whole different topic. But the Ted Bundys and the Edmund Kempers and these famous, notorious serial killers, Green River Killer, the Zodiac is the last one that hasn't been caught, aside from Jack the Ripper. But Jack the Ripper I don't think will ever be solved because it's just too old. But the Zodiac could still be alive. He could still be out there, and certainly with DNA and genealogy, we could wake up tomorrow and know his identity. But he was essentially a comic book villain. He wasn't satisfied to just do what most serial killers do, and that's try to leave as little footprint as possible. The Zodiac wanted a huge footprint. He wasn't interested in going unnoticed. He wanted to kill, and most importantly, he wanted to let the world know that he was out there, and that's what he did through the letters that he wrote to the newspapers. He demanded they be published on the front page. He challenged the police and the public to try to catch him. He was, in fact, really, he was like the Joker from the Batman movies, and he was the original, and nobody had ever taken it to that level before. And
what was his M.O. in terms of the actual murders?
Well, he's kind of thought to be a serial killer who targeted young couples, but his first official victim, it turns out that in 1978, after the Zodiac murders were known and there was a task force trying to catch him, it was learned that his first murder was in 1966 in Riverside, and her name was Sherry Bates. And history has kind of got confused over the last two decades, but she was, in fact, proven to be a victim of the Zodiac Killer. And that is now something that's kind of contested. It's been confused in movies and documentaries. But I do have the proof that she was determined to be conclusively a Zodiac victim. So it really started as early as 1966. He wasn't yet the Zodiac. So there were differences with what he did with the Sherry Bates murder. He did write letters, which was his kind of signature. He wrote letters to the newspapers as far back as the Sherry Bates case, but he wasn't yet calling himself the Zodiac. So then he came to the Bay Area for reasons unknown, and his first three sets of victims were young couples in secluded settings, and that's when he started calling himself the Zodiac. His last confirmed victim was a male cab driver in San Francisco. So he was all over the map. Sometimes the knife was used, sometimes guns, sometimes secluded settings, sometimes urban San Francisco, and in at least one occasion, he did wear a very bizarre costume that was kind of like maybe an executioner's type costume.
And his first letter to a Bay Area newspaper was when?
Well, he mailed three letters simultaneously on July 31st, 1969, and each letter went to a different newspaper. And each letter contained one-third of a cryptogram, which is a fancy way of a word puzzle, basically. And a few days later, he followed up with another letter in early August 1969, and that's the first occasion where he called himself the Zodiac. So it wasn't a nickname he was given by the newspapers or the media. It was a name that he chose for himself, and he used that name in his written communications into March of 1971. And that was the last time he used the name Zodiac, although he did write several more letters. Apparently, he had outgrown the whole Zodiac phase of his life and didn't want to be called that anymore. So a very bizarre individual.
And do we know or do you have a theory as to why he identified himself as the Zodiac?
Well, it was 1969 in the San Francisco Bay Area, and astrology was probably as popular as genealogy is today in pop culture. It was something that everybody talked about, and you would walk up to strangers and ask them, you know, what's your sign? So it was a good nickname. If you're trying to market yourself and you're going to write letters to newspapers and you're trying to get as much publicity and stir up as much attention as possible, it was a very topical nickname. I don't know if he was, as an individual, if he was really interested in astrology or if he was just taking the name and running with it, but it sure worked.
And this three-part cipher in these letters, where he was trying to taunt the police, he mocked them for not being able to catch him, but he was also sort of leaving clues in there as to his identity. Somebody actually, I guess it was a couple, they actually solved the three-part cipher. Who was this couple, and what was the cipher?
Well, the first cipher was split into thirds, and Zodiac ended up sending several more ciphers that were never solved. So only the first one got solved, and it was solved by a married couple who were interested in puzzles, and the ciphers were published in the newspapers, and so they had everything they needed to work with, and they decided to tackle it and see if they could figure it out. And they eventually did. They weren't the only ones to solve it. There was an anonymous individual who solved it, I believe, shortly before Don and Betty Hardin was their name. They get credit for solving it, but there was an anonymous individual who also solved it and sent his solution to the Vallejo Police Department and refused to be identified. And that's actually one of the items I got to see in person. Was the individual called himself a concerned citizen, and the thought is that it could have been the Zodiac himself who got tired of waiting for someone to solve his code, so he actually sent the solution to the police, which is something that, you know, I would think that I can picture him doing that, and that particular correspondence from the concerned citizen is in evidence, and it's considered to be possibly from the Zodiac killer. It's impossible to read now. It's been covered with so many chemicals to try to get fingerprints and so forth, but it was eerie to see it up close.
I'll bet. And so what was the cipher? What did the first part reveal?
Well, the Zodiac claimed that he was going to include his identity in the cipher, and so people were looking for, you know, a name, like, you know, Bob Smith or something like that, but as it turned out, there was no obvious name to be given. In fact, once the code was solved, at the end of the code, it said, I'm not going to give you my name because the police will try to catch me. So I guess claiming that his name was in the code might have been a ruse to get more people to try to solve it, but once the code was solved, the message was, it began with, I like killing people because it's so much fun, and it went on from there. It was a morbid message that I'm sure scared a lot of people, but if the hope was that his name would be in there, if it was in the code, it was still disguised.
And in terms of actually publishing these letters, I mean, what was the rationale? Did they think that if they followed through and published as the Zodiac killer requested, that he would stop killing?
He didn't say that he would stop killing. He demanded his letters be published, and if they weren't published, he claimed that he was going to kill a dozen more people. So, you know, it was a competitive environment back then. Every town of any size had at least two or three newspapers, and certainly, you know, it's like with websites today. If somebody wants to hold a website hostage and say, look, you have to post my, you know, share my message or I'm going to kill people, if you don't go along with it, then he'll just send it to the next website and they'll go along with it. So I don't think it was much of a moral dilemma. I think the publishers realized, you know, if what's the worst thing that can happen if we publish his letter or his code? You know, it'll be distracting and it'll scare people, but at least it could potentially save lives. And so that's why they ultimately chose to publish his letters, and they continued to publish his letters and codes until at some point in mid-1970, they decided to experiment and see what happens if we don't publish his stuff anymore. And that was kind of a risky experiment. I don't know if it led to any fatalities, but it might very well have.
In one of the letters, he claimed he had killed as many as 37, I think it was. I mean, do you think he was being honest, or was he boasting and given to hyperbole, or what do you think?
Well, he was definitely a boastful individual that probably, at least when he was in the character of the Zodiac, you know, he was a human being that would play this character of the Zodiac. So I don't think when he was walking around, you know, in as his own person, I don't think he acted like the Zodiac. I think he kind of got into character and wrote his own script like an actor. But 37, he worded it funny. He worded it at the end of each letter, he would put the score. And he wrote, you know, basically the police, 0, Zodiac, 37. So he's beaten them 37 to nothing. They haven't caught him, and he's killed 37 people. But the way he worded it, me, 37. And you can look at that and say he's claiming he's killed 37 people, or maybe he's giving a clue to his identity saying, I'm 37 years old. He claimed that he was giving clues to his identity in his letters and codes. So if he was doing that, then that's one way to interpret it. As far as the body count, 37, I mean, the guy was obviously not in his right mind. Would he have killed 37 people? I think he probably would have if he could have. And he hasn't been caught, so, you know, theoretically he could still be out there.
And he didn't send letters just to newspapers. He also sent letters to individuals, correct?
Right. He the first victim that was proven to be the Zodiac's first known official victim connected by the evidence was Sherry Bates, a Riverside co-ed, and 6 months after killing her, the Zodiac wrote simultaneous letters, once again, sending simultaneous letters, 3 in the same day, and he sent one to the newspaper, he sent one to the police, and he sent one to the victim's father, Joseph. So, you know, that was a clue that tipped off the police as well as citizens that the killer of Sherry Bates could also be the Zodiac, separated by 3 years. Because killing is unusual. To go out and kill someone, or some random person, is not something you see very often. It's still considered, in this day and age even, it's rare. That's why it's so newsworthy. But to follow it up by confessing in writing and to mail these confessions, especially multiple confessions on the same day sent to separate people, that's something that the Sherry Bates killer did, and that's something that the Zodiac did. And so that was a clear indicator to the police and the public that it could eventually, you know, that it could be the same individual. And eventually it was proven to be the same individual. The Zodiac definitely killed Sherry Bates.
And he also included in these letters evidence that he was there that only the killer could have known. Could you give me an example?
Right. And so that's something that I was not aware of this. When I started researching the Zodiac case, it didn't occur to me that there could be people out there who would confess who had nothing to do with the crime. So I wouldn't have known, if I was the Zodiac, I wouldn't have known that I need to include details in my letter that only the killer could have known. Me, Tom Voight, I would have thought that just confessing would be enough, because who in their right mind would confess unless they really were the killer? But there are people who falsely confess. And so the police are always looking for details. You know, if you're the killer, tell us how many times she was shot, how many times she was stabbed. And the Zodiac offered those details in his letters. He didn't really need to be prompted. He already knew that that's information that he needs to include in order to be taken seriously. And so he included how many shots were fired, what kind of ammunition was used, how the bodies were left, what position they were laying in, all kinds of stuff. And he knew to do that. He knew. And so that tells me that when he started killing, even before Sherry Bates, he already had experience. And who knows what his body count could be. If he started as a late teen, which seems to be the trend, Ted Bundy and Edmund Kemper and all these guys, they seem to start when they're in their teens, late teens, early 20s. And if that's what the Zodiac did, then by the time he was spotted in San Francisco and described as being in his mid-30s, he could have already killed 50 people.
Indeed. All right, Tom, we'll take a time out, come back, and continue to discuss more about the Zodiac Killer. Welcome back. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, S-Y, because I love you, R-E-T-T. The European Union's Patent Office has issued a new ruling rejecting two patent applications submitted on the behalf of artificial intelligence programs. That's right, a robot. The two inventions were created as part of a multidisciplinary research project organized at the University of Surrey in the United Kingdom. The researchers used an artificial intelligence called DABUS, or Device for the Autonomous Bootstrapping of Unified Sentience. DABUS created two unique, usable ideas that were submitted to the patent office. The first was a new kind of beverage container, and the second was a signal device to help search and rescue teams locate a target. According to a report in Tech Dirt, the EU's patent office rejected both applications on the grounds that they do not meet the requirement of the EPC that an inventor designated in the application has to be a human being, not a machine. You can read more about this in the news section up at coasttocoastam.com. All right, well, George Noory is coming to Big Bear Lake, California. That's fast approaching. It's Alien Snowfest 3, January 24th to the 26th. Again, Big Bear Lake, Alien Snowfest 3. And George will be there on the Saturday, Jan 25th, including a special Alien Hotcakes Breakfast, co-hosted with Tom Danheiser. Again, Alien Snowfest 3 happening in Big Bear Lake, Jan 24th to the 26th. More details can be found at coasttocoastam.com. Back with more of my conversation with Tom Voigt as we discuss the Zodiac Killer right here on Coast to Coast AM. Tom Voigt is here, a Zodiac Killer expert and the webmaster of ZodiacKiller.com. And while this was going on, and it was being played out in the newspapers and so forth, this kind of catch-me-if-you-can cat-and-mouse game with this deadly, this maniac, I mean, was there panic in the Bay Area? What was happening in the general population?
It was, and I've heard from people, you know, who were alive back then. They were in the Bay Area. They were, some of them were in elementary school, some were in high school, some were in college, some were, and so I have this broad spectrum of reactions and memories from that time, and nobody really felt. The common opinion was, as long as you weren't parked in some secluded setting, you know, like a lover's lane, then you're okay. And I think that's why the Zodiac went to San Francisco and committed a murder, you know, in a city neighborhood, because he wanted everybody to know that it doesn't matter who you are, where you are, he can strike. And that's when I think that people really felt, from the feedback that I've been getting for 20-some years, is the Paul Stein murder in the cab in San Francisco, in a neighborhood, a rich neighborhood, that put the Zodiac on their map, and that made them fearful. In fact, Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead, in an interview back in like 1970, he... One of his songs was inspired by the Zodiac, being fearful of being at a stoplight in Haight-Ashbury and being shot to death in his car by the Zodiac Killer. The Zodiac even inspired Jim Morrison as part of his Riders on the Storm.
Ah, yes.
I mean, so he was killing in the boonies, these young couples, and so as long as you avoided that kind of a scene, you were safe. But then he kills the cab driver in San Francisco, Mr. Stein, and people started to feel they're not safe anywhere. And then he followed up the murder in San Francisco 2 days later with a letter taking credit for the murder of Paul Stein and then threatening school children. I'm going to target a school bus. I'm going to pick off the kiddies as they come off the school bus after I shoot out one of the tires. So all of a sudden, that turned the Bay Area upside down. And the people who email me who were those kiddies who were riding in the school buses during that time, they still feel it like it was yesterday, you know, how scared they were.
My word. Was it at all overshadowed during August 69 with the Tate-LaBianca murders?
Well, there was some competition going on there, and yes, they were competing for headlines. At least Zodiac was competing for headlines, because when the Charles Manson stuff started to happen, Zodiac was kind of forgotten about for a while. And so the Zodiac, I don't know if that affected his behavior, whatever his plan was. I don't know if the Manson stuff affected him at all, but can you imagine? I mean, that's when I was living in California as a young person, is when Zodiac and the Mansons were going on at the same time. So I'm sure that probably had an effect on my psyche, and you know, these monsters are scaring my parents. My mother used to go to bed with a knife under her pillow, because we were in Los Angeles at the time, and while the Mansons were still on the loose, she would go to bed at night with a knife under her pillow, because of the Mansons. And then when they finally got caught, and I would see the news and Charles Manson and his crazy eyes, and oh my gosh! I mean, I'm sure that you asked me what got me into trying to catch the Zodiac. I'm sure it had to do with being terrified when I was a kid, and seeing my mom scared and wanting to make those monsters go away permanently. And my dad was a newsman, so he'd come home from his news job at the newspaper and put on the World News with Walter Cronkite, and Zodiac and the Mansons were on the World News. They were you can see video at my site at zodiackiller.com of Walter Cronkite talking about the Zodiac Killer. So I couldn't escape it no matter what.
Tell me about Sherrod Morrell and his work in trying to analyze the handwriting of the Zodiac Killer.
He was a question document examiner for the state of California, and he was very well respected, and he was a handwriting expert, and it was his job when a letter would arrive that was allegedly from the Zodiac, it was Morrell's job to scrutinize it and to make sure that the handwriting of the new letter was consistent with the handwriting of the previous letters. Sometimes Zodiac made it really easy by including physical evidence in his letters so that you would know, even without a handwriting expert to tell you, you would know that a particular letter was from the Zodiac. What he did was, in his San Francisco murder of Mr. Stein, the cab driver, he actually neatly tore a rectangle from the shirt tail of Paul Stein, and he departed the crime scene with that shirt tail. And in a couple, two or three subsequent letters that he wrote, he included a small bloody swatch of that shirt so that the investigators would know that the letter was from the Zodiac, even without the handwriting match. So, again, he had a kind of an advanced knowledge of how to prove that he was the killer without any question whatsoever. There was never a worry that a copycat might derail the investigation by confessing falsely, because Zodiac made sure that they would always know it was truly him writing these correspondences, because you have a piece of a dead, you know, a victim's clothing.
And so Morrell examined every letter from 66 all the way up until 74 when they suddenly stopped.
Right. He was the go-to guy that a majority of the letters were sent to the San Francisco Chronicle newspaper, and so Morrell was the most accomplished. He was the elite document examiner. So whenever in fact, even the Riverside Sherry Bates letters from 1966, eventually Morrell scrutinized those as well. He actually went to Riverside, and it was part of the determination that Sherry had, in fact, been killed by the Zodiac, and that's partly because of Sherwood Morrell's handwriting scrutiny. He said this is definitely the same writer who was responsible for the Zodiac killings.
One of the communications was a poem.
Right, yeah. Subsequent to the Sherry Bates murder, she was killed on her college campus in Riverside, and some months later, a desk was found folded up in one of the rooms, storage room, I guess, and someone had scratched a poem into the desktop, and the desktop poem was rather morbid, and it was about a woman being stabbed or cutting herself, perhaps, I don't know. And Morrell concluded that he felt like the desktop poem was definitely written by the Zodiac Killer. That wasn't enough to make the determination that Sherry Bates was definitely killed by the Zodiac. There was subsequent evidence that a task force was able to uncover in November of 1970. So the handwriting connection that Sherwood Morrill made was part of the conclusion that Sherry Bates was killed by the Zodiac, but there was also supportive evidence that had nothing to do with handwriting.
And in addition to analyzing the writing to make sure that they all matched and it was all the same person, did they bring in a profiler, someone to examine? Because handwriting, you know, can tell you sometimes a lot about a person's personality. Did they analyze it in that way?
It was really before profiling. Profiling is quite popular right now. The FBI and John Douglas and all that stuff. It's Mindhunter is a really popular miniseries, and profiling is kind of new to a lot of people. It really came about, developed in the 1970s. It wasn't so much, there really weren't profilers. What the police would do if they were, at wit's end, for example, with the Zodiac, usually it wasn't the police, it was usually newspaper reporters. Not the police, but newspaper reporters would go to prominent psychiatrists or psychologists and say, here's what this guy did, here are details of his crimes, here's what he wrote, what can you tell us about this killer? And the without fail, these psychiatrists would come up with the usual, the usual explanations. Oh, he hated his mother, just grasping at straws, basically. Nothing was gleaned from these opinions that would, obviously, we still don't know who the Zodiac is. And if he hated his mother-in-law, I don't think that would really help narrow the field. But there was no profiling really back then. And to this day, I don't think profiling, it's been attempted with the Zodiac case, but the Zodiac was, the whole key to solve the Zodiac case is to figure out what was he trying to accomplish? What was his motive? And to treat the Zodiac like he was a typical serial killer, he was anything but a typical serial killer. A typical serial killer wants to leave the smallest footprint possible. They want to go unnoticed. And the Zodiac was the opposite. So you have to kind of approach the case from that perspective. And every time I've seen someone try to profile the Zodiac, they treat him like he's just a typical serial killer. That he's a sexual sadist or that he's motivated by sexuality, or that he is motivated by jealousy and that's why he's killing young couples. He is jealous that they're intimate with each other and he can't get a girlfriend. It's all really lowbrow stuff. There are a lot of people that can't get a girlfriend and they don't go dress up like an executioner and kill people at a lake.
Right, right. Tell me about the Halloween card he sent to the police.
Halloween card is really interesting because it followed very quickly the unsolved murder of Nancy Benelak, who was killed in her apartment in Sacramento, California. And very shortly, like within a day or something after she was killed, the Zodiac sent the Halloween card. Apparently something was included with the Halloween card that definitely proved that it was from the Zodiac. I don't know for sure, but I believe that he did include a piece of Mr. Stein's shirt. And that was a detail that was held back by the police. Sometimes they would hold back information so that if they ever did catch the Zodiac or he ever did decide to confess, they could say, okay, tell us about the Halloween card. And the Zodiac would know, okay, well, I put a piece of Mr. Stein's shirt in with the Halloween card. And then you'd know that you were talking to the real Zodiac, because that's a detail that wasn't in the newspapers. So the police had to kind of protect themselves in the investigation by holding back little bits of information here and there, and that's still happening today. There's still details that the public, just isn't aware of, and I don't think it's so much because they're trying to rule out a copycat or anything like that. I think it's because after 50 years, who knows what secrets were kept? It's really, the case is 50 years old, and whatever was being held back in 1969. I'm sure the current investigators may have no idea what was held back 50 years ago. But the Halloween card was sent to a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, who was played by Robert Downey Jr. in the David Fincher movie.
Yes.
I recommend, by the way. And it was an implied threat to Paul Avery's life. Paul Avery was the reporter for the Chronicle who's writing a majority of the stories about the Zodiac. And the Zodiac sent that Halloween card to Paul Avery. And I was fortunate to have Paul Avery as a source early on when I started ZodiacKiller.com. And he actually started carrying a gun because of that Halloween card.
Wow. Wow. Was the communication all one way, or did the police also try to communicate with the Zodiac Killer through the media?
That was something that the police knew that that the more letters that they had from the Zodiac, the more evidence they had that they could use to catch him. So the letters were physical evidence. And so the police did, you know, initially they had enough proof to know that the Zodiac was responsible for the first two or three Bay Area San Francisco attacks, but they used the news media and the print media to request that the Zodiac go ahead and please send us more details to prove you're really the killer and not just some person trying to take credit. And whenever the police did that, the Zodiac complied by sending more letters. So so it was a tactic that worked, but I don't think it was the police outsmarting the Zodiac. The Zodiac was very brazen, and he didn't seem to care how much handwriting the police had of his own or how many fingerprints they had or anything. He just he seemed to just not care if he got caught or not.
You mentioned the Fincher movie. Just quickly, we're almost heading into a break here, but how much of that movie is accurate?
Oh, it's a movie. You know, it's like I would say... Well, any scene between Robert Downey Jr. and the cartoonist didn't happen. It didn't happen. They didn't really even know each other. They worked in the same building, and that's about it. You know, if you're looking for accuracy, I would say the director's cut on DVD includes a great documentary called This is the Zodiac Speaking, which is probably the best documentary on the case I've ever seen. And I would say watch the movie for entertainment, but if you want to learn about what really happened, then watch the documentary. In fact, the documentary, I got permission to reproduce it at ZodiacKiller.com, and you can find This is the Zodiac Speaking, the full version, at my website. So I would highly recommend watching that wherever you watch it. Just watch it.
All right. And again, ZodiacKiller.com, the website. We'll take a time out, top of the hour, and then resume our exploration of this amazing and chilling cold case. Now entering its sixth decade, it remains unsolved. The Zodiac Killer.